are back. It's still Monday, April 29th, 2024. This is Futures Power Hour, sponsored by CME Group. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio. He's Anton Kulikov. Anton, it's a pretty good Monday so far.
I agree. I mean, it's one of those days where very slow opening, drifted a little bit higher. It's starting to remind me like one of those days back in November, December, where everything was green. Probably late December, because S&P is up 13 points, Russell's up more than the S&P on a percentage basis, up 0.75%. Bonds are up. So this is a very much mid-December rally. I think that this is what I would consider that. Volatility coming in by another 24 cents on the cash VIX. We're below 15 on the cash VIX, actually, right at 15 on the VIX futures. It just seems like everything is unwinding from the last couple of weeks. And honestly, I am all for that. I am very much enjoying this day.
You would think that ahead of this week, at least, where we have what some may consider a super saturated earnings and macro calendar, that the volatility clench would stay there until perhaps Friday. We're going to have Amazon and Apple earnings in the next few days. I think 16% of the S&P 500 overall reports this coming week. We have the FOMC meeting. We have non-farm payrolls. So it's a busy few days coming up, Anton. Yeah, vol's down a quarter, which is something that you can't sneeze at. You're seeing that markets are kind of grinding higher. I know it's 80 degrees here in New York. I know it's like 90 degrees down in DC today. I'm sure it's pretty warm in Chicago and where you are as well. It feels like a summer kind of trading day where vol's in a little bit and markets are scratching and clawing their way up. Yep. You don't really have much of a problem. Anton, it's been a few weeks since we've done any review of positioning in the market, so I think it's a good time to check, because the last time that we checked on the S&P 500 positioning, according to the CFTC COT report, it was the first time that we had seen a net long position in the market since October. We had a little bit of a back and forth there, but now two consecutive weeks where S&P 500 positioning is in positive territory. Net longs are on the table. This is the first time that we've seen that in this market since the lows in October. I find it very interesting that the market flips to net long at what some made it consider to be a technical capitulation point coming into last week. And so now we find ourselves where, okay, people are starting to crowd back in and get on the long side after a big dip. A lot of it's large speculators, hedge funds buying the dip right now. Interesting change in behavior. But one thing that has not happened is that you haven't seen a return of the vol sellers just yet. A few weeks ago, Anton, you were talking about a net short position in the futures market of sitting near negative 44,000 contracts, which in absolute terms means nothing. But coming into last week's report, there was a 46% decline in those net shorts. Last week, there was a 10.1% decline in those net shorts. This is the smallest net short position of 2024. So even though vol has come back in a lot here, people really haven't been taking part of that move. Do you think that this is an incentive or setting up some sort of structure in the market where people feel the need to chase? As you point out, vol down a quarter today. Who's taking advantage of it? Not seemingly the same group of people that were all year long.
I mean, listen, this is... As much as you've, tried to change me into being a little bit more of a, technical-based trader, looking at the fundamentals and stuff, kind of the core, the core person of Anton still likes to go back and just say, listen, this is just a unpredictable move in the market that you shouldn't try to explain. This is just what happens when volatility comes down. Fear comes out of the market that... a lot of people kind of don't realize this from a psychological perspective, but VIX is not literally the fear. It is not fear itself. It is a measure of fear. And why I say that so distinctly is because the reason VIX is down is because fear is coming out of the markets. People aren't just going here and saying, okay, well, you know what? We're gonna knock VIX lower today, and therefore equities are gonna go higher. Like, that's not how it works. It's a reflection of sentiment, right? It's not like somebody there is like pulling the levers and one day it's this, another day it's this. It's a collective of a lot of participants. And you cannot predict that or give reason to that, especially when fear comes out. Because here's the thing, when fear comes into the markets, there is usually a very big reason for that. war, geopolitical tension, the Fed announcement, maybe inflation's coming back, there's usually some kind of catalyst that drives fear higher. But what drives fear lower isn't necessarily that things are good, right? That's what a lot of people miss. What drives fear lower is the fact that nothing really is sticking out as a sore thumb. Nothing is on the radar, right? You could still have all the same stuff from last week or 2 weeks ago be forefront center. But unless there's something that affects market sentiment that's different today, fear is going to go lower. S&Ps are going to go higher. This is why markets stair step higher and take the elevator lower. It's not because that's just somebody's pushing the levers and saying, okay, today we're going to make it go lower, or tomorrow, it's going to be another update. It's not random. It's unpredictable. And those are two very distinct terms that have to be taken differently, because random implies that, well, it's a roll of the dice. Whatever the dice land on today, that's what it's going to be. Unpredictable means that it is a, there are a lot of reasons that contribute to it, but no individual could actually discern what those reasons are. And if volatility is going lower, it's even more unpredictable, because that's the biggest unpredictability factor in the market. Isn't that volatility goes higher, it's that it goes lower. Because when something explodes, you can point to saying, oh, yep, inflation is running hotter, that's why volatility is going higher. But when vol goes lower, you don't have an explanation. Nobody has an explanation, because it's just the lack of an explanation that's causing it to go lower. So anyway, that's the way I think about it. And I think in this case, you have to take it as one of these days, vol's going lower. I don't care why it is, but I have to take that I have to be very cognizant of that, because usually lower vol days beget more lower vol days, which means markets may continue going higher no matter what the reason is. There you go. That's my answer.
Good answer for me, Anton. We look at the bond market positioning here. Last week, there was a 33.6% decline in the net short positioning in the market. Now it's slightly increased here as well. I do think that helps provide important context for what we've seen at the long end of the curve, particularly in NZN. We could have done this in ZB as well. But the point I'm getting at here is, while there has been a little bit of a bounce here in bonds at the long end of the curve, it feels like it's been more of the short covering variety than people stepping in to say, I want to be long bonds, is people who are already short saying, okay, this is enough for me. I'm happy to take my chips and go home right now. If you recall, we were looking at a net short position that was north of 500,000 contracts just a few weeks ago. And so as this drop in bond prices has slowed and perhaps turned the corner a little bit here in recent days, providing a nice rebound here, Anton, as you point out, bonds are up across the curve today. Not a bad day. You look at the positioning shift here, and it makes you think that it's not people excited about getting in long. It's just people who are taking profits on their shorts. Is that a sign necessarily that this bounce doesn't have legitimacy? No, but it does make you wonder how much enthusiasm there is right now. And this week, there's a lot of risk to the bond market, because you're going to get the Fed on Wednesday, and then they're going to provide the lens with which we have to view non-farm payrolls on Friday. And if Powell comes out on Wednesday and says, this next non-farm payrolls report is the most important payrolls report in the world, as Dr. J would say, like, you know, hug your kids, hug your wife, you know, tell all your loved ones everything important you have to say to them, because this could be it, folks. You know, if he says that, then the market's going to be very clenched up for Friday. And if he comes out and says, we don't really care what's happening in the labor market right now, we're focused solely on inflation, the jobs report could come in plus 200 or minus 500, and it's not going to change what we think about what's happening over the next few months, markets will sing past the non-farm payrolls report on Friday like it doesn't even exist. So this week, bonds, yes, there's a little bit of a bounce here, but also a lot of positions have been taken off the board, which means there's also a bunch of people who can come back in and deploy that capital if they hear something that they don't like or a number that they don't like to see in the next few days. So, Anton, I know you're a bot and bull here. I'm looking for entries and opportunities, but this concerns me a little bit about the nature of the rebound.
I get it. I don't necessarily... I think I could see both sides to an argument for being a bond bull or bear. But I think at the end of the day, I have to go back to that long-term pod odds example and or analogy. You know, you don't have to necessarily put a position on now, or if you do, you don't have to put it on for the next month or 45 days. But I think it would be, I think you have to look at the longer-term picture for bonds and say, you know what, I can't really see them going lower as much as I can see them going higher over the next 6 to 9 months. And if that's where you stand, where, I mean, that's where I stand, at least, if that's where you stand, even in the short term, I can't see myself putting in a better position. Maybe I extend my duration, go further out. Maybe I sit on the sidelines for a little bit, wait for a place entry, but I would not be short. And that's something as a trader, especially trading options, this is a very important thing. You have to mind not just your direction, but your time frame.
I think actually that's the most important point about this, right? This is not something that necessarily conflicts with your view. If you think about what's happened, I could just draw it to start to interrupt you, but to draw a point here about what's happening with gold and what's happening with oil, right? There have been pullbacks in both gold and oil prices recently, but the run-ups in prices over the last several weeks were accompanied by such significant swells in net longs. You'd have to see the net longs get out of the way for the prices to really pull back. And even though you've seen a pullback in price, the net longs haven't gone anywhere, for example, in gold. It's more just like the weak hands that are shifting. But the people who believe in gold, they haven't gone anywhere right now. And so when I think about what's happening here in bonds, I go, okay, it's not like this is driven by a significant shift in enthusiasm in people wanting to buy this market. This is people who are already short saying this is a good place to take some profit here. So when I see the smallest net short position since September 2022, I say, yeah, this is a nice little rally short term, but I don't know if I can trust it short term, because there's a lot of people who could jump back in and say, no, the Fed's doing the wrong thing this Wednesday and punish us. So if I want to be long, I've really got to think long term here. There's a lot of risk front loaded in the days ahead. There's a lot of people who could come back in and push this thing to the downside that have now abandoned ship. And so if I'm a bull, duration is your best friend here right now. This is not crowded whatsoever. And that could work against you given a week that we have ahead of us.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. If you're kind of, you know, waiting for a place to entry, that's totally fine. But that's kind of the nice thing about options, is that you get to choose a time frame, you get to express your view in not just a directional bias, but also a time frame. And if you've been watching the show, I've been kind of expressing how longer term long call spreads and bonds, that was kind of my game plan, because I wasn't really too sure when there would be a bounce. I wasn't really too confident in the short term, but I was more confident in the back end. And I think for a trader looking to put on a position, ask yourself the question, okay, am I bullish or bearish? And if you can't answer the question, then ask it with the following condition. Am I bullish or bearish over the next week, over the next couple weeks, over the next month, over the next 3 months? And wherever you have the strongest conviction, that's where you can choose to put your position on, because there are 2 week options. There are 1 month options, 3 month options, 6 month options. And that's the nice thing about trading. You don't have to necessarily be bullish this week. You can be bullish in 3 months from now and express that position today.
Anton, let's keep this train moving forward here. Gold positioning, again, there's a small pullback in price, but what are traders doing? They're using the pullback in price to add to the longs in the market. And it's worth noting that this is not a crowded trade still. We're not even at the yearly high in terms of net longs in the gold market right now, Anton. So I see this pullback. I know that Tom, yesterday I was listening to first call for the week last Sunday evening here, and he thinks that gold and silver are dead. The CME raised margin requirements, and so they really squeezed out the speculators in the short term that were pushing the market higher. That very well may be the case, but traders aren't getting the memo right now. They're sticking in net long. They're adding to the net long on the pullback, and the market's not really showing signs of deterioration. When we get to gold and silver later, there's still a good deal of technical support. Trends are holding up right now, and that is someone who is bullish, you feel pretty good about, particularly when you look at those longer term timeframes. Anton, it's a similar story here in crude oil. There's been a small pullback in the net long position here, but then again, there was a pretty big run-up in the week prior. We're still north of 300,000 contracts here. While the positioning has been paired around the cooling of Israel-Iranian tensions, this is a market that's still situated near the largest net long position that we've seen since October of last year. And so it's worth noting, while this isn't the most net long that we've been, say, over the past year, it is at a relatively high point. And so if we don't start to see some upwards movement here henceforth, there's a good deal of downside if people say, okay, you know what, I'm going to take my long oil bets off the table. But Anton, I don't think that we're necessarily in a zone where you could say we're at like the 95th percentile. If you were to slap an IVR type of Z score on this, you'd be sitting closer to the 70th or 80th percentile than you'd be the 100th. And so it's not necessarily overcrowded just yet on the long side still.
CL, one of these assets that, quite frankly, I haven't really paid much attention to since Ivy Rain dropped below 30, which was I don't know, like a couple months ago or something. I've just been kind of ignoring it.
I feel
But
you.
I did see some movement this morning in CL, or maybe it was last night. There was some movement in crude oil. Let me take a look. Yeah, it's down 91 cents today. But again, I can't really. To me, I don't really know where this is going, and I'd rather, save my money and, put it somewhere else.
I think that's fair. Crude to me, we saw negative IVRs last week. Oil prices were rallying. And I know there was a popularity in trying to fade the market by selling calls when vol spiked, but selling calls when vol is negative, that's not for
Yeah, it's
me.
a tough situation.
Not in crude. Not in crude. And the same thing with, if the market, you think the market's going to go up selling puts, where's your reward for all the risk that you're taking? Again, we've seen that the net longs in this market continue to come off the board now, only 33,000. It's the lowest level of 2024, lowest that we've seen since mid-September 22. There's nothing to like about the market for the euro. Okay, let's talk about some of this price action in these markets today. Anton, I think this is a really big week for stocks, not just because of what's happening here. And I need to pull this up on my screen real quick. And let's get this going here. And I see that my charts aren't showing. Just a quick second here. Let's go back to screen two. There we are. Okay. Anton, that should be good. We're creeping up into resistance here at the start of this trading week in ES, the M4 contract, 5145.25 right now. Anton, as we've been noting for the past several sessions, the rally that took place at the end of last year into the first 3 months of this one found support at that daily 2134 EMA envelope. And where have we been rallying back into ever since we broke down through it in mid-April? Well, we find ourselves pinned right at that 2134 EMA envelope. It also comes right below the neckline of the head and shoulders pattern near 5167. So as far as I'm concerned, this week, technically speaking, 5142, we'll call it 5170, is a key area that if we find ourselves on the other side of by, say, Friday market close, you're going to feel pretty good about as a bull because you've survived all the slings and arrows that the bears could throw at you. If it was the World War III tensions, or if it was the spate of earnings, if it was the rising interest rates, we really haven't seen that significant of a pullback. We're basically where we were at the start of March. And then we've also started to break the downtrend from the highs that we had throughout the month of April. I'm looking at 5170 in particular this week, Anton, because if I find myself there on Friday, that means that we've cleared the 2134 EMA envelope. It means that we've broken the neckline of the head and shoulders pattern. It means that we've broken the downtrend from the April swing highs, and we survived this bevy of event risk and vols coming back in. What's to stop us from going back to the yearly high? It'd be very difficult to convince me on a technical basis that that's not the path of least resistance moving forward, particularly as momentum turns the corner. We're about to get a bullish crossover here in MACD. We have not had MACD trending higher since the last day of March. So again, a change in the behavior of the market here. We're getting to this resistance zone. The indicators are rolling over in a more bullish manner. Bears are on their last legs right now. You really need things to go against you this week. You need the Fed to upset the apple cart. You need the earnings to disappoint. You need non-farm payrolls to come in scorching hot if this thing is going to break here. But this is the line in the sand right now for traders directionally, where the next 200 points in this market could be decided.
So I think as anybody who has a kind of who operates with a certain bias, which we all do, but whatever bias you know yourself to operate in, more bullish or bearish, I think you have to, and this is, I think, true regardless of who you are. Bulls tend to, if you're bullish or tend to have a bullish bias, bulls tend to overestimate these. I'm sorry. Bulls, when the market goes in your way, you tend to sometimes underestimate how much it could go in your way, even when you're bullish. And when you have a pullback, if you aren't properly grounded, you could all of a sudden forget your bias in place of fear, right? And what that means is when you have a pullback, you're scared to get in. You tend to overestimate the downside versus the upside. And the reason I say this, and maybe it wasn't the best way to say it, but when we were trading back in the middle of March, were fully expecting at some point to have a pullback, right? Even as being very bullish as we were, probably the most bullish two people in probably in the company, quite frankly. I mean, maybe Dr. Jim, but he's always, I mean, I don't know his bias, but anyway, I think it's bullish. But anyway, and this is the thing we have to be careful of is when we got the pullback we expected, right? 5 to 10%, that's normal. That's what we were expecting. That's why we were doing call spreads. We were preparing for it. And then we have this pullback, and then all of a sudden, we get scared. We're like, wait a second. Well, I mean, yes, we're seeing vol come in, but could this be you just a dead cat bounce? Could this be? I think that if you are bullish and your consensus before you had this sell-off was, okay, I'm looking for this amount of a sell-off. If this happens, I'm going to get back in. This is the signal. This has been the signal over the last week is, okay, we had the pullback. We had some consolidation. I think if you were true to your own analysis over the last couple of months, I think you have to consider this as a very reasonable time to get back in as a bull. I mean, personally speaking, I mean, we were talking about the Russell bottoming last week, a very clear bottom last Friday, not this Friday, but the Friday before.
Yes.
So, and now we're kind of are we scared? Are we not? So I'm not saying you and me, but I'm kind of talking as a general trader. You know, if you saw your actual expectation of a pullback come to fruition, which it did, okay, if you're still a bull, then you need to be looking for a place to get back in, right? Now, if you've changed your sentiment and you think you're bearish now, that's fine. But again, it's like, I have a very hard time actually believing people when they kind of flip-flop all the time, right? Generally, people trade better for one direction over another. Like, for example, if you're bullish, you tend to trade much better in bull markets than bear markets, right? And you tend to be, you tend to make better decisions. If you're a bear, maybe you do the opposite. Now, I think it's a lot harder to be a bear than the bull by and large, but there are some people who, when the market goes lower, that's their zone. They can trade that. They know when to get in, they know when to get out. But when the market's bullish, they have trouble trading into the upside because you're inherent bias. Well, if you're a bull, then your strength should be trading in these bull markets, in a market that goes up. And one of the key indicators is how well are you grounded in getting back in when your analysis comes to fruition. And I think in terms of the pullback, we hit exactly what, at least for me, 5 to 10% pullback, that's what we got. Looking for a place to buy the dip, I think this is the dip. Well, then, if I'm hesitating, you have to take that with a huge grain of salt. You have to look for a place to get back in if you're bullish. Anyway, and that went a little bit of a tangent, but let's continue here with the Russell or whatever you were going to do next.
No, you bring up a good point. And look, there was, when you and I were talking the two Fridays ago, Ayatollah's birthday, we were, started to nibble a little bit more. You'd seen a big pullback in the Russell when you get the bullish falling wedge breakout back here on April 19th. It was reasonable to get in long again. But I got to say right now, the risk to reward here for being long, it's almost like it's worth waiting a little bit more if you want to take a directional bet. And I only say that because I see the downtrend from the April highs here. We're starting to crack on through that. By the way, we had that big bearish outside engulfing bar in the 8-hour time frame on April 25th. We've traded through that high level here. We had swing lows appearing throughout mid of March, right? Initially after the CPI sell off on April 10th, right around this 2030, 2040 area. We're starting to turn into there. I would point out that in a lot of these markets right now, if you're looking at ES or you're looking at NQ or you're looking at the Russell, we're actually back in a place where, depending upon what you're looking at, we're closer to the midpoint of recent ranges than we are to either the highs or the lows. If you think about it, we're at 17,917 right now in the NASDAQ. Where are the lows from the middle of April? We're talking about 17,113, so about 800 points from here. Where are the highs in the NASDAQ? 18,709, about 800 points from here. So taking a directional bet, if I'm going to take a directional bet, quite frankly, short may be the way to go if I'm looking short term, because we've now rallied up into resistance. And if we can't clear this here, then the next 800 points to the downside. But if I'm looking at the vol profiles in this market, Anton, given the event risk ahead of us, sitting in the middle of ranges that have been carved out over many recent months here in the NASDAQ, the swing low that we just had a week and a half ago was where? Lows that we carved out in the middle of January. I think you can look at these and look at Condors. Not to say that I don't agree with you directionally bullish. I'm long ES. I'm short the Russell puts still. But I'm thinking if I'm laying into a new position today, I don't know if directional is the way I'd want to go. I think I look at this market and I think I want to go Iron Condor. There is still enough vol on the board here. We're putting on a Condor 18,750, 19K in the NASDAQ on the, you know, call spread side of it, and maybe 17,000, 16,750 on the put spread side. Gives you something around, and we can even look this up, you know, better to show than tell. You're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 60% probability of profit. And I think that's a healthy place for traders to look in the short term. We can go out to 52 days here, and we could slap on that Condor right outside of the recent technicals. We'll talk about the 19,750, and then we go to 17,000. Yeah, that's 53%. 53% probability of profit. I mean, maybe you want to widen that out a little bit more, which if you did, you could get closer to your 60% or 67% probability of profit. We'll move them out another 250 points. There you go. There's 63% right there. Outside of what's been just the most since middle of January, you're talking about 3 months plus here of a sideways move, and we're in the intermediate point, the median point, directly between the highs and the lows of that range. So forget trying to call a direction this week with your Amazon, your Apple earnings, with your Fed meeting. Forget non-farm payrolls on Friday. If you're laying into a new position, many of these markets are sitting right in the middle of multi-month ranges. And that even goes for the S&P 500 here, by the way, at 5150, we'll call it right now. The highs at 5333, the lows at 4963. You're basically in the middle right now. So take advantage of being in the middle of a range. The bet basically is we're not going to see the lows of the last 2 weeks or the highs of the year cleared out at any point in the near future. And if you start to see a lurch directionally towards either end, then clear out a one side or adjust the position.
You know, I think that it's a good, I think that's a good place to start. I don't think I would be as neutral as you. I think if I were to do an Iron Condor, which the volatility environment is, I think is, you're 100% correct. I think the volatility environment screams Iron Condor. But I don't think I could do an Iron Condor equally weighted. I think I would have to lean a little bit more long on the,
sure,
maybe a little bit short at the money put and a short 16 delta call spread, you know, because when, here's the worst thing that can happen. You're bullish, you're looking to buy the dip, and you're like, okay, but the volatility environment, you know, and which is important, you're like, I'm bullish, but I'm going to do an Iron Condor just to see what happens because we're in the middle of the range. If this is a dip and you are correct and this is a dip opportunity, you ain't going to have time to manage that Iron Condor as it blows through your short call spread. And then all of a sudden you're sitting at a loss on your Iron Condor when you knew full well that this could be a dip that you could have just sold a put spread on. That has happened to me far too many times. And for me, I would rather be wrong on the put side, you know, than, you know, potentially collect another dollar or two on the call spread, you know, forego that if I'm wrong on the put side. I would rather have that happen than me sell both sides and then have this, you know, have the S&Ps go to 5,300 and then me be like, well, what the heck? Like I was a bull. Come on, you know? And I tell you that happens a lot more frequent than you think if you are not convinced in your bias. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, be completely, you know, just flinging money around, like, you know, be super bullish, all that. No, all it means is that you have to be confident that if you're going into a pullback environment, you're looking for a place to get back in, not change your bias fundamentally.
No, the bias hasn't changed, right? We've talked about the what happens. Obviously, April was a letdown, seasonally speaking. Back-to-back quarters of 10% gains, 5 months in a row. April typically is green, and obviously it didn't happen. But then last week we were saying, okay, here you have an exhaustion point. You know, fewer than 8% of stocks in the S&P 500 were above their 20-day, their 1 month moving average, which historically has coincided with swing lows in the market. And then you think about the returns and you have 5 months green, 1 month red. What does the rest of the year look like? A month later, 3 months later, 6 months later, 12 months later. We talked about those stats and Let Me Explain last Tuesday with Tom and Tony. They're all green. 70 to 90% of the time, the market still goes up immediately thereafter. So this, is this a low or was this the low? I mean, the historical tendency of the market would be you have to favor it being the low. Where's the technical evidence for that? Well, let's get through some of these levels that were kind of like the lines of demarcation between stagnation and then the bears asserting control temporarily. In the S&P, that was that S&P 500 neckline, right? The 5167 area of the head and shoulders pattern. Once we got through there and we started to crack on through that back on what, April 12th, that's when things really accelerated. That kick started the chain of what, 1, 2, 3, 6 red days in a row in ESM4. Same thing in the NASDAQ. Once you lost 18K, the market quickly slumped into the swing lows that you had here in the middle of January. And so that's why I'd like to see those levels retaken. If you're back above 18K in the NASDAQ, right, what's stopping you from going back to 18,350? Get back to the descending trend line from the April swing highs. And if you get through there, what's to say 18,700 isn't right around the corner? So we have some technical wood to chop. The seasonal backdrop certainly favors this being a dip buying environment, selling vol type of environment. The question is, can we get through these technical hurdles now to give us a little bit more confidence? Okay, we know we have the seasonal backdrop at our back. Now we have momentum at our back. All right, the fundamentals are still good. Earnings are still good. The economy's getting better. And by the way, Anton, earnings, this will be my last little shtick here. The market's shift around earnings last week should be noted, and it should be screamed from rooftops. Last Monday, I believe we talked about the first quarter earnings reaction skew, where over the past 5 years, when a company has produced a positive earnings report, EPS surprise, the 2 days before and the 2 days after that earnings report, the average return for the stock was 1%. For companies that had negative EPS surprises, that same 4 day window, 2 days before, 2 days after, was producing an average loss of negative 2.3%. Now, coming into last week, the first quarter this year so far was producing no change for companies that were producing an earnings surprise to the upside, and they were punishing companies that were missing their estimates to the tune of negative 6.1%. Mm-hmm. Now, we went through last week. Talk about a change in sentiment, Anton. Cumulatively now, for all companies that have reported, this isn't just for companies that reported last week, but in totality now, last week was so good that the average return for companies with positive EPS surprises is now plus 1%, in line with the 5-year average, and the average loss for a negative EPS miss is now negative 2.5%, mm-hmm, which is just slightly bigger than the 5-year average of negative 2.3. So think about how good the market reaction was to earnings last week, that it was able to shift the cumulative profile of first quarter returns from being winners aren't rewarded and losers are getting hammered, to now back to normal. Winners are getting a nice little pat on the head, and losers, they're still getting punished, but not horribly. Mm-hmm. So sentiment here in this market has shifted dramatically. The reactions to earnings substantiates that very plainly, in my opinion. And right, so north of 18K in the NASDAQ, north of 5170 in the S&P, the bears, that was your fun time in the sand. Bulls are back in the driver's seat, plain and simple, technically.
And I want to mention this one more thing, is it's such a good thing you mentioned. And here's the thing. When you talk about the technical hurdles to get through, I want to remind everybody, and if you have a different opinion, please let me know, but we're not talking about a 30-day window for those technical hurdles to, you know, to break through. It's not like when you have a buy the dip situation and you're waiting for a technical hurdle to break, that could happen in 1 or 2 trading days. And I want to remind you, the reason I say this, what did you say, 50, 80, what were you saying for the NASDAQ, the technical hurdle to break?
18K, we'll call it.
Okay, 18K. That's that could happen by the end of this trading day. That could happen tomorrow morning. The reason I say that is not to say that, well, get in now. I'm saying that if you're going to do a trade, a range-bound trade, and you're thinking of an iron condor 30 days out, and you have a break to the upside, you could be seeing losses the next day, the next 2 days, with no room to manage, and then you're stuck with that position as the market's ripping higher, and you double whammied yourself, because now you can't make money on the long side because you have to eat the losses on the short call spread. My point is if you're going to be range bound, be very careful about the time frame you're expecting the range to hold, because in the bull market, ranges do not last. In a bear market, ranges last. Like in 2022, how long did we have to wait to clear, I don't know, how many hurdles? It took maybe 3 months. in a bull market, it could take days. So mind the difference in sentiment when you place a trade on.
You know, I was looking at our return stat today for the average year when the S&P 500 is green for the calendar year, right? What's the average return through the end of April? And it's just about 5% for the S&P 500. It's like 5.6%. The SPY right now is up 7.39%.
Yeah.
This isn't a market that's really overcooked, right? It's not like we got too far too fast. And you look at the AAII investor sentiment survey, the bull bear spread is exactly zero right now. The bull bear spread, well, mind you, if you respond to the survey, it's what do you think the returns of the market are going to be over the next 6 months?
Right.
So this is not an overstretched sentiment that way. At the close last week, in fact, when I saw this morning, the fear and greed index that CNN puts out there, which again, you want to think about what the public thinks. That was, and that's based on technical factors, quantitative factors, but like when they go to what's the fear and greed index in the market? Well, it was still in fear mode last week. So this is not a market where everyone was bullish. The CTA position has been cleared out. A little bit more technical chop here, and you could start to say we're going to favor a swing higher back to the top side of recent areas we've been. For the Russell, we're already breaking the downtrend from the April highs, mind you. If we can get through that 2134 EMA envelope, which we're trying to do today, you start to feel a lot better about making a move back towards 2150 or so in the very short term. And May, by the way, don't sell in May and go away. That's a nonsense term that the smart people in the room tell the dumb people in the room to give them their stocks. Because if you look at the market over the past 20, 30, 50 years, if you hold through July, buy through July should be the saying, Anton, not sell in May, buy through July and then go away for August, September, and then come back as a bull.
I'm gonna hold you to those words. By the end of July, you're gonna be sitting here and saying, don't sell in August and go away. Hold through the Santa Claus rally.
Anton, last year, I think I'm one of the first trading days of August, we had a show on Futures Power Hour here where the show title was Technical Red Flags Appear. And we raised the very point. It's like, hey, look, the characteristics of the momentum profile have changed in the market. It's starting to keel over. If you've been long, this is, you know, you really don't want to be long here. Plus knowing that August is a bad month and September is too, like, just be patient. So, and then we waited it out and we tried to get back in long October. We missed it early, but then we were finally back in long on the right side at the end of the month. So you got to be patient over the summer. Everyone goes away. People go to the south of France or to, you know, up to the Great Lakes or the Ozarks or the Hamptons. So there's no one really actually trading at the end of August. Okay, bonds. This is an interesting market. You're a little bit more optimistic than I am still here, Mr. Kulikov. If you look at the short end of the curve, the gains are still more or less there. It looks like a full green candle. When you go out to the long end of the curve, say to ZB, for example, actually the gains are there too still now. So I guess it's been a good 25 or 30 minutes. Anton, I've expressed my concern with the positioning in this market. I still see that there are salient cut odds in June, July, September, which if the market is lining up with the Fed's recent commentary, then seeing cuts in June, July, or September is probably unlikely. And that to me represents an albatross around the bond market's neck still. As has been the case for many weeks, when these rate cut odds have been squeezed out, it's pushed bond prices lower, so to speak. Maybe correlation isn't causation, although given the fact that short-term treasuries, really bills, not any of the bonds here, but bills are used as collateral for, say, overnight borrowing, the SR3 contract, there's going to be a correlation there. There is actually causation. So how do you square this for me as someone who is fundamentally hesitant, someone who's waiting for the Treasury refunding announcement details today at 3 p.m. Eastern, by the way, for the second quarter? That's a big event risk coming down the pipeline today, even if there's no bond auction. Why would I want to start looking long here now? There's no vol in this market. I go to ZB, 22.7 IVR. What's the appeal in front of non-farm payrolls and FOMC when everything is expected to be good or hawkish or not bullish?
It's negative. That's the thing. All the sentiment around bonds is negative. So if you're going to be, you know, if you're taking the other side as a trader, which that's really our goal. Like, here's the thing. A lot of people think that traders we want to make money, which is always true. But how we make money, that's the question that I think sometimes is confused between traders and institutions, right? Traders, we have the luxury of taking the other side when everybody's saturated. And the thing is in bonds, I think that's the key argument. Is that when you have a market that is so fundamentally bearish from a sentiment perspective, interest rates weren't going to be interest rates aren't going to be cut now till I don't know who knows when. And then we were expecting it, and now all that to me screams like a buying opportunity, because will interest rates get cut? Yes. Is it not when people expected? Yes. Those two things would only make me more bullish, because if here's the thing where I'll be concerned. If bonds were rallying 130, 135, 140, if that's where price bonds are, and everybody's expecting interest rate cuts, we're seeing more. That's where I would start to be nervous about my long position. That's when I would exit my long position and go to something else. But we're on the opposite side of that sentiment. So to me, this is not, I wouldn't call this a step in front of a falling knife type of trade, but it's one of these trades where I'm kind of loading up my gunpowder, and
I
as
feel
soon as
that.
the first catalyst, then we're going to see a big move to the upside. But once it happens, it happens. So again, could you wait until you see a clear signal? Absolutely. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But if you do, I think you're going to miss out on some initial gains on the onset of that reversed sentiment. But again, if you want to wait, like we said in the beginning of the show, that's fine. I just don't think that you're going to make as much as you could if you kind of start nibbling now.
Yeah, and if I bought Amazon, in 1998, I would be a billionaire today. I'm starting to see the technical sides of a turn. Granted, I'll give you that. It looks like a little bit of a bullish falling wedge. You look at how price action has evolved here on the 8-hour time frame in ZB over the course of April, and you can start to see how maybe we're starting to roll out into a rounding bottom. We're not there quite yet, and this 2134 EMA envelope has been holding up as resistance the entirety of the month. So let's see what happens here. But I could, again, being ticker agnostic, it's looking like something is slowly starting to come together. I just want the charts to show it. Anton, when you and I were talking last week, we were saying how if you could move back above the April 16th swing low, which came in at 113.10, you'd have a little bit of an opportunity for a long play off the weekly low. I certainly didn't take it because I just haven't found bonds to be that interesting, and I fundamentally don't find them compelling. Technically, I'm not a scalper, and bonds aren't that interesting to scalp. But if you were in it then, this has been a nice little bit of price action here. And you have to be encouraged by this. If you're already long, maybe extend duration, as you said at the start of the show, because this week's event risk is so substantial. The long bond trade may be one of those where you time is just your friend, because if the albatross of those rate cut odds needing to be squeezed out do hang overhead, it's just going to be a glass ceiling right now. We can rally, but the rallies aren't going to have a lot of strength to them, and you're going to just chop around and chop around and chop around. That's my feeling on how the market's going to be. That's not a trending market from my perspective. And to find trends, you have to go short-term time frames, and I'm a garbage scalper, so I'm going to avoid doing that, Anton. But we want to go over to metals here right now, because the metals are just not letting go. They've been told by the CME, speculators, get out of this market. We're changing your margin requirements. They've been told by people like Tom, the metals trade is dead. Vols come back in. And yet prices don't have anywhere to go. Anton, we go to this daily chart, and where have we been finding support? Both in gold and silver, the 1 month moving average. We had pullbacks to there in silver, at least at the end of March, and the market rallied. Here we're having it in both gold and silver this time around, and yet we're starting to slowly grind our way back up here right now. I got back into my long silver SI position last week. Then we fell to the 1 month moving average, not overthinking it, having missed that entry opportunity at the end of March once more. I feel pretty good about this chart still. I think they look pretty good here. I know vol's down, but that's why getting the opportunity to get long at the money call spreads, not going to look the gift horse in the mouth, particularly knowing that IVR here is masking the true nature of volatility in the precious metals market, which is to say that vol historically has been a lot higher than it's been right now. It's only because vol has been depressed for so long that the IVRs actually look high. So if we're in the midst of what could be, as I believe it to be the case, a multi-year breakout in gold and silver prices, having the opportunity to get long call spreads on dips makes a whole deal of sense. Are you encouraged by the price action that there hasn't been a more significant pullback, even though we've seen vol get absolutely crushed here in recent days?
Yeah, actually, I mean, yeah, this, when somebody says the metals trade is dead and then you see a continuation to the upside, that kind of like the same reason for bonds, being bullish on bonds, it kind of makes me be more bullish on precious metals, right? Because It's like when the sentiment seemingly goes away, yet prices continue to rise ever so slightly. You know, gold, again, if you pull up gold, it's a very nice example. You know, another, was it third or fourth day in a row, just slowly creeping up, $5 here, $5 there, $5 there. You know, gold is one of these things that, you know, you add up a lot of $5 gains, all of a sudden you're up $20, then you get the shorts to cover, and then you have another $30 move to the upside. And then there's, again, now you're making a technical high, so then all the technicians come in and start buying it. So it's like, you know, see, it's such a interesting statement to make. You know, and Tom, funny enough, Tom would agree with this, because he talks about taking the other side of everything that people say is dead. So it's kind of funny to do the same thing for him. But no, I think there's some room to the upside. Personally, I think if I were to go put a trade in here, it would be very small. To start, you know, if I was going to put $1,000 into gold, I'd start with 200 or 500 long call spreads, pretty much exclusively. I can't really find a reason to do anything else. That's pretty much it. And just start to nibble, kind of like bonds.
Just start to nibble. Anton, it's 1:48 here in New York, so we're going to keep this thing moving. Energy stages a small bounce here today. It's been a interesting day for energy markets. Crude oil was not participating in that earlier, and it's now sitting closer to the lows of the session. It's not the most compelling pattern here, but 1, 2, 3, green bar, doji, down bar. It looks a little bit like an evening star candlestick cluster, which is a topping pattern. It's coming up into the area where we've seen a little bit of a bounce of that 2134 EMA envelope, an area since February 8th, ever since we closed above it, has been support on pullbacks. So we found support last week in this market. But why do I find this potential evening star candlestick pattern so fascinating? Because where are we finding the highs piercing in that doji, the middle of those three candles? Right against the September 23 highs. So this is looking again, which was support after breaking through it. We get those Israel-Iran tensions. It becomes support for the first part of April. We break down through it on the 17th, even on the rally overnight on the 19th. We fail up there. We're failing here again. So it looks like we're getting some resistance in that neighborhood of about $84 a barrel once more. This is a really compelling chart all of a sudden, technically speaking. I know the vol really isn't there right now in oil. I haven't been doing much of anything in it for a few weeks at this point in time. But there seems to be signs of exhaustion shaping up right now. I'm not thrilled about being short the calls with the volatility profile in the market right now, but this looks like something that could be ripe for a little bit more of a pullback. I don't think there's a sexy slam dunk trade on the table like there was back in December, January, when you're a market at support with high vol. You just sell puts when you see something like that. Here, on the other hand, Anton, though, natural gas does start to show something maybe that was worth looking at. The price action last week was ugly, of course, when we tried to break out, but we do show signs of basing here. Jamal and I were kicking the tires on a long 190, short 220 call spread. We are seeing this 190 area hold up as support still. How do you feel about natural gas, even if this is a market that hasn't been doing anything for the better part of 6 weeks?
I don't feel much of anything. It's kind of like crude, but worse. Because crude, I'm at least looking to put a position on. Natural gas, I'm almost never looking to put a position on. You know, unless there's some kind of, you know, here's the thing. With natural gas, it's kind of like trading volatility, like VIX futures, from the standpoint of when it's kind of just hanging around here, there's no trade to make. Like, you can't really inventory volatility. You can't really, you know, trade a range bound without getting killed when you have a move against you. Natural gas, kind of the same thing. You can't really inventory it without paying too much. The only way to trade it is off of a high, in my opinion. And right now we're nowhere near that. So to me, I'm going to pass, for the same reasons I'd pass on kind of trading volatility.
Anton, the long call vertical 190, short 220 gives you a probability profit of 46%. You could look at this from the short put perspective here. We'll say we'll do 170, 190. 67% probability of profit, max profit of 48 against a max loss of 15.20. So it's a little bit better, right? Vol's not super high right now in natural gas. It's only an IV rank of 22.7, but you're starting to see some support come into play here. So depending upon your risk profile or flavor, the bet here is if you're short the put spread, where we've seen the lows carved out since February, what we saw in April, right around 190, it's going to hold in the short term. Momentum isn't great, of course. We've seen a lot of false starts to the upside, but if you can see some acceleration through like $2.15, you can make a case that you've carved out a nice little bit of a range low here. Not too different than what we started to see at points last year, where in the contract you had this long period of basing. We're being long per se, vis-a-vis the long call spread wasn't advantageous. But if you were short put spreads, you actually did fine because the market just didn't go anywhere. And maybe that's what's shaping up here again now as we go through the end of April, because last year when we found this flatlining in the market for several months, it kind of occurred around the same time, right? You get that big pullback in crude at the start of March 23, and then you flatline. What do we have here? The big pullback in crude at the start of March 24 and the beginning of the flatline. Something to think about right now. Not a lot of vol, not the sexiest thing, but it's really uncorrelated with everything else that goes on in the marketplace. So having a natural gas overlay for me, it makes a lot of sense. I think this is actually a better opportunity, a better trade than doing the long call spread, given everything going on. I'm going to take a swing at this here. We'll put it on. We'll see if it works. We'll hold it for a few days. It's not a huge trade, but it gives me something that's diversified away from the Fed, away from the non-farm payrolls report here in the coming days.
All right. Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean,
I don't love it. I don't hate it, but it, you know, 63% probability of profit. We'll take it.
Sure. I understand.
You can understand it, Anton. I love this weather here in New York. I am a real dog when it comes to allergies. This is a miserable time of the year for me, Anton. I'm constantly on that edge of sneezing, and I can't get it out of my nose. What else has been on the edge all day is the Japanese yen. My goodness, here, Anton. What a volatile market. Ivy rank has started to come in. It was over 100 earlier. Now it's back to 81.1. We saw that the dollar yen spot rate challenged the 1990 high up near 160.40 overnight. And then there was the talk of some intervention coming into play here a little bit right now. You could see this happening overnight right around 1 o'clock in the morning, shortly before then. There's been no confirmation, of course. Oil prices haven't started to come back down. Bond yields really haven't broken yet. So does the Ministry of Finance want to use its reserves now to effectuate the kind of change? Not necessarily, particularly when the BOJ is saying that it doesn't really care about the currency as long as the currency is not volatile. Could this be the end of the road? It feels like the BOJ and Ministry of Finance maybe trying to shake out the speculators here, scare them a little bit. If this is the line in the sand, Anton, though, for 160.40 in the dollar yen spot market, that's what we're going to call it. This is what corresponds with the 6J M4 contract for whatever rhyme or reason. That's a pretty tradable low. I know there's a lot of fear out there right now, and the yen's been an absolute dog, but now we're starting to see the signs that this is a market that's wiping out. These are big exhaustion types of moves.
Yeah.
This has been the thing I've been kicking on the tires on all day. Forget the natural gas trade. It's whether or not this is the place to say I can sell a 60, 0062. We'll go out 39 days, but let's do a short put vertical, 0062, 0062 and a half. Maybe get a little bit more vig in there. The market seems pretty convinced by current pricing that the lows that we just saw overnight, that's it. We're not getting down below 0063 again.
Right. Yeah. You know, Ivy rank was 101 this morning. Volatility for the 4-day options was about 17. That's actually risen up a little bit. If you look at the weekly options, which honestly for me is a better gauge for like near-term volatility, like what to expect over the next few days, sitting at almost 20. That is higher than the S&P 500, Chris. So, you know, talk about like, you know, volatility coming in quickly. I mean, that is not something you see for currencies ever. Seldom ever.
Except seldom.
Obviously. I mean, the same volatility reading for the E-mini S&Ps for the next 4 days is 17.9%. So again, you know, you're looking at a currency that has a lot of current daily risk. It kind of makes you want to do a short-term trade in there, like a butterfly or something like that, just to fake the expectation. I rarely say that for currencies, but this may be one of the few times where you can consider selling a straddle and maybe buying some further out wings. I mean, right now, look at that, a weekly straddle, if you look at that, is trading for over $1,000, in terms of pips. That's a lot, for a weekly option in the Japanese yen. So, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily do it, but if you are considering doing something, that may be the first thing to do.
Anton, the other thing that we have our eyes on right now, we're still looking at that, holding that short put spread in the euro. We're basically, it's not quite at break even yet, but it's almost there. Effectively 107.50, getting it on the swing lows after that ECB meeting on the 10th, or about the CPI on the 10th. I kind of like this because it looks like we're trying to break back through former support and resistance right now. Interestingly enough, on a day when the BOJ intervenes, the euro is up, which leads me to believe that if you're looking for an intervention trade, it's going to be a broadly dollar negative event. And so if you don't want to trade the yen specifically itself, but you want to have some proxy short dollar exposure, there may be opportunities elsewhere in the space. But the euro here, getting a little bit of lift right now. Let's talk about what's next on the calendar for tomorrow. It's a busy day. There's a lot of little things. If you're the one person trading Mexican peso futures, you have a Mexican GDP report tomorrow. Otherwise, Eurozone GDP, German GDP, German jobs data, UK housing data. Not really much of anything on the US side per se to watch. Anton, as we do at the end of every one of these shows, we do a brief bit of education. Today, we are talking about margin calls. Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures. Here at the top banner, click on this link. We'll take you to that great coursework put together by the fine folks on the Tasty Live research team. Again, for margin, initial margin refers to the funds needed to establish a position. Maintenance margin is the amount required to keep the position on. But if your account falls below that maintenance level, a margin call will be issued, and you will need to top off your account to the initial margin level in order to maintain that position. Getting margin called is never fun. It's a rite of passage for many, yours truly included, in markets. But it's only happened once for me, so hopefully it never happens again. But learn from our mistakes. Learn about what margins call are and avoid getting one of them yourselves. And if you've got one before, make sure it doesn't happen again. Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, or simply click the link here at the bottom of the slide, and it will take you there directly. Anton, I'll see you again on Wednesday. Wednesday, we get the pre-FOMC show, so that's going to be exciting. I know that you're on good standing here today. Any final thoughts before we take a brief 23 hour break here on Futures Power Hour?
No, I think I'm pretty good. I think it's time to watch the clock for Wednesday, because I think we may get some good volatility after that. But for now, I'm good.
Well said, Anton. For Anton Kulikov, I've been Chris Vecchio. This has been Futures Power Hour. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, here every Monday through Friday on Tasty Live, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central. Of course, until then, there's more Tasty Live programming coming up next. After a brief break, you're going to get Dr. Jim Schultz with From Theory to Practice. See you soon.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered